We need a real investigation. I don't think we have one yet.
Yes, it's true. And yes, it is a crime.
Hello, this is Cleta Mitchell, and welcome to our podcast, Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell. This is a podcast about all things having to do with elections, how elections are supposed to be run, how sometimes they're run in ways in which they're not supposed to be run, and what citizens, mainly what citizens can do to reclaim our election process and make sure that our elections are actually administered in accordance with the laws of the various states. So we're very blessed today to have with us a guest who's been with us before, one of our very first guests, Scott Walter, who is the president of the Capital Research Center in Washington, D.C. And Scott, welcome back. There are so many things we could talk to you about. I want you to tell everybody a little bit of, who may not have heard our first interview, but tell everybody about Capital Research Center. And I want you specifically to talk about as well, what is Influence Watch? So tell us about CRC and Influence Watch.
Sure. Capital Research Center's mission is to study special interests, you could say. The people who are trying to influence our laws and public policies. And we especially focus on the nonprofit sector because it is so grossly unreported, unstudied, and the rest. Now, if you're a conservative donor or a conservative foundation, like I believe I know somebody who serves on the board of one and whatnot, those do tend to get scrutiny from time to time, very hostile, unfriendly, unfair scrutiny. But if you are, well, let's say Pierre Omidyar, who's an incredibly important guy in American politics, and yet probably not one American in 100 has ever heard of him, has any idea of the hundreds of millions of dollars that he spends using multiple different groups. And that's just one easy example. Another would be Hans-Jörg Wies, another left-wing billionaire. He's had enormous influence for years and years on American politics. And I will say last year, the New York Times actually did do a couple of good stories on him, but that was a very rare occurrence.
So basically CRC fills in the blanks and does the research that we can never count on the propaganda media, as I think Molly Hemingway has dubbed them, because she says they're no longer reporting the news. They're spouting propaganda, left-wing propaganda, the New York Times, Washington Post, all of those. So CRC, I guess we would say, fills in the gap and does actually amazing research and reporting.
Well, thanks. We try very hard, and sadly, it is a very target-rich environment.
So CRC studies the nonprofit sector and the influences by nonprofits on public policy, and the election system has become a major focus of CRC. Before we talk about that specifically, do tell everybody about Influence Watch, which is something that I remember when you first told me you were going to start that. And I thought, it's about time somebody did that. And I wondered, how are they going to do it? It's so massive to try to create a database of all of the, particularly the organizations on the left. But you've done an amazing job. So tell everybody, what is Influence Watch?
Sure. Well, the easiest way to find out is to go to influencewatch.org. And it's basically a Wikipedia of those influencers, especially the influencers on the left. And it's foundations, individual donors, unions, activist groups, staffers, movements like Green New Deal or Occupy Wall Street, government agencies. We have a number of government agencies because, of course, as we all know, those are now getting so politicized. So it's 9 to 10,000 entries already, adding 100 or more a month typically, and plus critically updating constantly because there's always new things coming out. That said, one of the things I always repeat is we love questions, right? If you've heard of Arabella Advisors, it's because of my great team, but we've discovered Arabella Advisors because somebody asked us about the group Demand Justice several years ago. And we discovered as we dug into that, oh my God, it's not really a group at all. It's just a pop-up entity out of the giant Arabella Advisors empire, and that led us to the whole empire. Now, to be very precise, perhaps because of all the criticism we've launched at this, Demand Justice got spun off as an independent group, so they couldn't be attacked for being part of the Arabella empire. But please, it was still millions of Soros dollars going through the Arabella network that launched it in the first place, sustained it for years, and then after all this criticism, had the move spin out into being an independent entity that actually files a Form 990 with the IRS, for instance.
And, well, I mean, we could take any one of these and spend hours talking about them. But I want to focus specifically on, because this is Who's Counting about All Things Elections, I want to focus specifically on some of the research that you've done and published, some of the reports you've published about how the left has influenced elections and the election system through nonprofits. So can you just sort of lay the groundwork for, is there a way to explain, here's an overview of what they did and about when they started? And I know that the left has always been about political process. That's just in their DNA. It's not in the conservative DNA. Definitely is in the left's DNA. But can you just kind of give us an overview going back to whenever you think it really began to take root and just walk us through sort of where we are today?
Sure. Well, one of the reports that I know you're fond of, we put out a year or so ago, and it's called The Left's Voting Machine. So if you search for Left's Voting Machine at capitalresearch.org, you'll find the report. One of the points that it makes is that in the last decade, let's say, the left very intelligently and strategically had sort of a three-part plan, okay? And the three parts are pretty simple. The census, the 2020 elections, and redistricting. Now, the census, people will probably go, what? I thought we were talking about elections. But of course, the census is critical for two things. First, for trillions of dollars in federal funding get allocated according to where the census says people are. So they want, the left wants to have as many people counted where they are, have their strengths, so they can get the money going there. And literally, the left spent tens of millions of dollars and in the decade between 2010 and 2020 trying to influence the election, trying to have left-wingers conduct the election, because, of course, the census has to hire an army of workers to actually carry itself out. They also cared about the rules on it. They fought. The most famous thing was they fought over, should the census ask somebody it's counting, are you an American citizen? And of course, that was considered completely outrageous, even though 80, 90% of all American citizens would say, well, that's a reasonable thing to ask somebody. And obviously, if you're allocating votes in redistricting process, whether people are citizens matters a lot or should. And again, everybody, let's, as a quick side note, the left is outraged by these things that 80, 90% of Americans would agree with. And that's ironic because our president and his administration recently told us that, his main spokesman was asked, what's an extremist? And she said, well, if you're out of step with the majority of Americans. Well, if you don't, if you are opposed to voting, to IDs for voting, you're out of step with 80% of America. If you're opposed to asking people whether they're citizens and only letting citizens vote, you're out of step with 80 to 90% of Americans. But okay, so anyway, the census, that was the first step. And they studied it. They did their best to manipulate it. They fought over all kinds of things. They had their own activists doing the census when they could. That was the first leg of the three-part stool. The second,
Before you go to the second one, I don't know if you've seen the report. It didn't get a lot of, it was in about May or June of 2022, this year, in which the census admitted that it had made errors that resulted in several blue states being apportioned House seats that they shouldn't have been awarded and denied to red states like Florida and Texas and other red states who didn't get congressional seats that they should have gotten because of the errors in the census, which they have yet to describe as to what those errors were. But those are pretty significant errors. And it not only impacts, as you say, the federal dollars, it impacts the representation of the people in the Congress, in the House of Representatives. And significantly, it impacts the Electoral College, which is based on the number of House seats. Partially, that's one of the criteria for determining how many electors a given state has. So basically, it tips the scales for the Democrat presidential candidate because the census made errors that gave more electors to the blue states and took them away from red states. And there's been no discussion about that. Hans von Spakovsky at Heritage has written about it, but there's been, apart from that, I've seen nothing about that. But you're telling us now that this was all by design. This was part of a plan that the left planned and funded well in advance of the census.
Yeah. Well, let me give you credit. I have seen that study, and Hans is virtually the only person alive to have written about it. The other thing is, I don't trust the census. I would be very surprised if they exaggerated the amount of errors rather than
that's a pretty
diminishing
good point.
The amount of errors. But we need another brief digression to give you credit, which is you are virtually the only person on the conservative side who has been saying for decades at this point, process really matters. The rules to the game will affect who wins the game. But you've also been saying quite rightly, the left is obsessed with these things and constantly, as I said, they spent 10 years and tens of millions of dollars trying to affect the census. We had no idea that even existed. We certainly weren't doing anything whatsoever to counter it. And the rest, the process always matters. The rules of the game affect the winner of the game. So this is a classic example of that. And you're right. It's the Electoral College that's being affected, as well as the House of Representatives majority, and as also, of course, the state redistricting for state legislatures. So this is a massive thing. And by the way, let's make another point, Cleta. Those people who got their seat illegitimately in the House of Representatives, if the tables had been turned, if it had been right-wing foundations funding this kind of thing and the census under a Republican administration making this error, those House of Representatives members, every time they poked their nose out their door, every time they made a speech, there would be savage left-wing protesters claiming that they're illegitimate, that this is wrong, you're fake, you shouldn't be allowed to have a vote in the House. But, I mean, the outrage would be off the charts. Just like the outrage would be off the charts if Zuckbucks had been flipped the other way, if it had been right-wing billionaire money and right-wing operatives running election turnout efforts.
Well, it's pretty remarkable that they focus on the census, and I kept seeing signs of that. And every time there would be a meeting of, I remember I was on a panel for the ALEC meeting in 2019, I think it was, in which we had lawyers who are familiar with redistricting and all at a training session at the ALEC meeting, American Legislative Exchange Council, which is conservative state legislators, training them on how to properly conduct their redistricting obligations under the Constitution and state law. And I mean to tell you, the left wrote this scathing, all these articles saying that we were gathering in secret to plan gerrymandering for Republicans. And in reality, I guess the truth is everything I always accuse us of, it usually is we should just pay attention because that's our clue that that's what they're doing. So Okay, so they did the census, they manipulated the census, checked that box. Okay, what was the second part of their plan?
The second of the three parts was the 2020 election itself. They have, as you steal something from you again, the left has groups of groups and networks of networks. And a couple of the important entities, again, go to influencewatch.org and look them up. The Funders Committee for Civic Participation, which is a network of funders and activists trying to do get out the vote and candidate training and all, you know, everything there is in an election, right? From stirring up your base, from attacking your opponents, from training new candidates in the pipeline to win political offices, to get out the vote, to voter registration, you name it, they do it.
With their nonprofits. That's the thing, yes. Is they're doing it with 501c3, what are supposed to be charitable dollars. So the donor gets a tax deduction and then they go spend it in areas that are, like, for instance, I'll give an example, not just the inner cities where they think, well, we're going to get 90%, 98% of the vote in the African-American community. So we don't ever have to say anything. We just have to get them to the polls and we know they'll vote for us. And students on campus, that's part of their targeted Democratic new majority, young people, students, not working, not young working people, by the way, it's colleges. And so if they can put as many, you know, basically put voting precincts outside the dorm rooms of the students, so they roll out of bed and vote, they, you know, they figure they're going to get 90% of those votes. So they don't have to mention vote for a candidate or political party. They just know if we put our process right in the lap of these voters, if we get them registered and just get them a ballot, we're going to win their vote. And they don't have to do anything more than that. That's what they did, I think. That's how they use the nonprofits. I say, oh, this is all nonpartisan. But they're not putting those efforts into getting more rural voters or people who are might tend to be more conservative. They're not doing it in those areas at all, are they?
No, the equivalent would be something like, you know, putting absentee ballot efforts into gun shows, for instance.
Gun shows, right.
Somehow I suspect the New York Times would not consider that to be helping America's vote and fighting voter suppression.
Right.
I don't think it would be played that way.
Right. Okay, so the election of 2020. And so one of the things, talk about the number one way that they manipulated the outcome was through what?
Through Zuckbucks.
And so tell everybody what that was. Yep. And you've written a lot on this, done more research on this than anybody. Where would people find the details of that? So many things you've written and reported about that. Where would people find those?
Sure. Well, first, I want to give a shout out to a mutual friend of ours, because a good place to start on Zuckbucks is J. Christian Adams' article, The Real Kraken. Terrific piece put out shortly after the election. I'm proud to say making good use of our research on Zuckbucks, which he called the single greatest factor in the election, in his view. And Christian, of course, is one of the most active persons alive fighting vote fraud. But it's not like vote fraud is, you know, the ballot stuffing and whatnot is never a problem. And God knows there's lots to be said there. But it's worth understanding that though he thinks that is very important and dedicates his life to fighting it, nonetheless, he thought Zuckbucks, which didn't have to be fraudulent, was a way to juice turnout in Democrat precincts. He thinks that was the biggest factor in the election. So just worth keeping the perspective there. That is so central to understanding 2020. Now, if people want to go and learn more on this, I would, again, probably the easiest start is Influence Watch, and go to the two charities, the 501c3 charities, so-called charities, where the hundreds of millions of dollars in Zuckbucks passed through. And that would be the Center for Tech and Civic Life, which got roughly $350 million, and then the
350 million. $350 million.
Yes, sorry.
Right.
Yes. And then the other that had to do with a had to make do with a mere $70 million or so, the Center for Election Innovation and Reform.
I think it's research.
Sorry, not reform, not reform. You're right. Research. Yes. I always want to get that wrong. Research. Although I have to say, election innovation doesn't sound good to my ears. I'm not sure
not when you know innovation. Not when you know who's running and what kind of innovations they have in mind.
Exactly. So I'll sketch out quickly just the way the scam worked. Those two groups took the hundreds of millions and gave them directly to government election offices. So the Center for Election Innovation and Research gave its money mostly to the secretaries of state, the top election officials in each state, with the exception of Michigan, where they gave it to a C3 that the Michigan Secretary of State, Jocelyn Benson, arguably the worst in the nation, that she had set up, and then that nonprofit charity spent the money by hiring two top Democrat public relations firms. So again, just laughable to pretend this is nonpartisan. Now, the other one, the Center for Tech and Civic Life, that got the $350 million or so, it spent the money almost all to local election offices at the county level, or it depends on how the state organizes its elections, but to the county offices, the city offices, the townships, whatnot. And of course, what do we know about money? Money comes with strings. If I go up to you and hit you up for money, you're going to have some strings on that money, almost certainly. So, and we know that if you go to the Influence Watch things I said, you can find links to some of the actual contracts that those two charities weren't being charitable to government officials without first having a contract about how the money was going to be spent, and that's where the strings are. By the way, first let's get rid of one of the usual fig leaves trying to cover this up. When I testified in Georgia about this to the Georgia Senate, a hostile senator said, well, this is just for PPE, personal, this is for masks and plexiglass.
COVID. It was all COVID.
Yeah, because of COVID. It's just COVID, that's all. Every single entity that has ever studied this, including, may I add, National Public Radio, right? everybody has found that the proportion of the money that went to protection like masks and plexiglass was in the single digits of percent, 2%, 4%, 6%, whatever. And yet, of course, that senator trying to cover up for this nonsense was pretending like that's all it was and what a monster you are. You don't want people to have masks. Absolute lie. She had absolutely no evidence for that whatsoever, except it was a talking point. I'm sure she's apologized since. We'll have to look into that.
Right.
But anyway, the local election offices and the secretaries of state, when they were signing their contracts, it was for things like you're going to have tons of drop boxes. Now, as we know, thanks to a Supreme Court decision in Wisconsin a few months ago, although it was obvious to anybody who read the statute, you didn't need Harvard Law School to read the Wisconsin statute that clearly forbids unmanned ballot drop boxes. It's ridiculous to pretend otherwise. And unfortunately, it took 2 years for that to be settled in law. But that was one of the things that they required of Wisconsin groups that were going to get the money. And by the way, Wisconsin was the absolute first state in the nation where any of the Zuckerberg stuff was announced. Now, I'm sure the fact that every single observer of the election considered Wisconsin probably the most narrow, tight battleground state in America, right? The left was viciously angry that Hillary had lost the state in 2016, and this was going to be absolutely ground zero for the 2020 election. So, of course, the left-wing Democrat operatives handing out Zuckbucks first went to Wisconsin. Now, another battleground that they went to very early on, and again, since the election, we've been able to document this, along with the help of other good groups. Broad and Liberty is the group, a conservative group in Pennsylvania that's done a great job documenting there. And guess what they found? They dug out emails where they discovered that the Zuckbuck groups were talking to the top left-wing voting districts of Pennsylvania and whispering to them before anything had been made public about these grants, whispering to the places like Philadelphia, which again, ground zero in the 2020 election, telling them and similar Democrat strongholds, hey, we're going to give out a lot of money for your election stuff. You want to be sure you're prepared. You want to get in on this. And by the way, on those email chains, secretly telling this to the best Democrat locations, you even had Democrat operatives, like no pretense whatsoever, actual Democrat Party operatives being CC'd. Because of course, this was all one big scam. It was exactly what you would think if you looked into the background of the people who ran those two charities that got the $400 million or so. So again, just, you know, it is absolutely conclusive, documented evidence every step of the way. Now, speaking of Wisconsin, another thing we know that happened there that was, again, outrageous and only came out after the election, we have the fact that there were local election clerks, honest little election registrars and clerks and whatnot, who were writing to each other and writing to other officials saying, the Center for Tech and Civic Life, which has given us these millions of dollars, they told us that we have to work with this grant mentor. I've studied the philanthropy world for 20-some years. Right. Never heard the term grant mentor. It's a wonderful innovation, let us say. It's an election innovation to have a grant mentor. And that grant mentor was out of yet another dirty C3 charity, the National Vote at Home Institute. In this case, it was the head of the Wisconsin branch of that group, whose head, by the way, was rewarded with a Biden administration appointment to dealing with the post office.
Right.
Leave that aside. That's Amber McReynolds, whom you know well. But anyway, so the National Vote at Home Institute's grant mentor to the actual election officials was doing completely outrageous things, so outrageous that multiple election officials resigned in disgust and outrage at what he was doing. He got himself a government employee badge, for instance, without being a government employee. He got himself keys to rooms with mail ballots. I mean, things, again, I don't think that if Republicans had this kind of money and were running this kind of an operation, there'd be a very serious danger they do things like that too, which is exactly why when I talk to state legislatures, I say, nobody should want this. I don't want right-wing billionaires pulling this kind of crap in our elections. I don't want left-wing billionaires. And by the way, let's add another thing, foreign funding.
Right.
These are C3s doing all this stuff. There is no limit in the amount of dollars that C3s can do. And there is no limit on who can give to C3s. You can be a Russian oligarch. You can be a Saudi billionaire who has very retrograde views on men, women, and sexuality. You can be a Chinese communist princeling. There is no restriction under law for them doing this. So the idea that we shouldn't all unite in true bipartisan fashion and say, no, no, billionaires don't get to take over election offices. They don't get to privatize elections. That's a no-brainer.
Well, that's really what they did in 2020. They, you know, David Plotz of Obama fame, he was Obama's, what, campaign manager? Or he was
one of the top campaign operatives. I forget if he was the manager or what the title was.
I mean, he and the two or three others had the top roles.
Yep.
But he joined Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg, and he wrote a book called How to Defeat Donald Trump. And basically laid out that they had to get the Democrat turnout up in those cities in key states. Wisconsin was one, Pennsylvania was another, Georgia. And if they could just get that Democrat turnout up, and that's what, the, and then he drew, it's not pretty, far reach to figure that he actually directed the program with his bosses, nearly $500 million, nearly $500 million from one person and his wife and their foundation that went into these election offices, and they got a tax deduction. I mean, you're right. I mean, if the Republicans, conservatives ever did anything approaching that, there would be hell to pay. But okay, so they managed to manipulate the outcome and win the 2020 election. We've seen all the wonderful policies that our country has endured since then, whether it's open borders or the humiliation of Afghanistan, gas prices, inflation, but we'll leave that because they believe if we manipulate the process, we win the election and then we get our policies, and we've just seen it played out that way. So that's two. So we have the census, check, 2020 election, check. What's the third thing they've been working on for the decade?
The third thing, and interestingly, this is the first two were big successes. The third, not so much. The third part was, what happens after the 2020 election? Well, the biggest election process item that happens after the 2020 election is, of course, redistricting, yeah, both for the U.S. Congress and for the state legislatures. And that was one reason that they cared so much about that 2020 election. It wasn't just Donald Trump. It was also going to be the setting up the rules and the lay of the battleground for all the additional elections of the decade, because every decade you have to have redistricting. Now, the reason that didn't work is fascinating, and it's the final bit of evidence that Zuck Bucks worked exactly the way I and Christian Adams see it, as a way to juice turnout in the big cities where the Democrat votes are rich. So here's the thing to note. In the election of 2020, presidentially, the Democratic Party did spectacularly well, right? I mean, they beat Trump in the popular vote, even though Trump himself got more votes than any other Democrat or Republican had ever gotten. And yet Biden gets even better. So they're just off the charts in that presidential vote. But on the other hand, normally, if you have a spectacular presidential success like that, you would also have a big pickup in the House of Representatives for your party, and you would have big pickups in the state legislatures. Well, oddly enough, that didn't remotely happen. The Biden's party in the House of Representatives lost seats despite the unbelievable turnout. And similarly, the Democrats did not pick up one single chamber in any state legislature in the country. They lost three chambers, picked up zero. Again, bizarre. What explains this disproportion? Well, that's easy. All the Zuck Bucks did was juice the turnouts in the big cities, but the Democrats already have the House of Representatives seats there, and they already have the state legislative seats there. So yes, those incumbents had great incumbent protection, but because the Democrat Party does not actually have a broad base of support across America, it got nothing in the state legislatures that are going to be doing the redistricting, both for U.S. Congress and state legislatures.
And school boards and county commissioners and all
yes.
of those. But you know, what's interesting to me is to underscore that this was a top priority. You had former President Obama and his former Attorney General Eric Holder, who set up a specific fund. And you may know off the top of your head, it seems to be like $350-400 million that they raised just to elect Democrats to state legislatures, and then did not, as you say, did not pick up a single state legislative chamber and lost U.S. House seats for the Democratic Party. I mean, the margin in the U.S. House is only, what, four votes between the Republicans and the Democrats? You wouldn't know that by the way that Nancy Pelosi just rushes, crams things down everybody's throats. And I mean, a divided U.S. House of Representatives ought to realize the country's divided and we shouldn't be doing radical things. But they have that 3 or 4 vote margin, and by golly, they're just going to ram everything through. Plus, they have proxy voting now in the House. That's a whole different topic. So that the people, the Democrats, just hand over their votes to, literally hand them over to Nancy Pelosi, and they don't even show up. So it's kind of a big mess. But so they did not win on their third point with redistricting. But they did win with the census, which basically stole seats from Republican states, from red states. So,
yep. No, that's I mean, again, if we had a functioning media, that would be a scandal. But I can't believe one person in a thousand in America
even
knows
about
what you just
said. No. So, Scott, you've done all this work and you followed and tracked all of this money. I mean, it's all really, I don't even know where to begin to ask you, but you made a reference to, I do think it's important to, you made a reference to Pierre Omidyar. Tell everybody who he is. Why would he be significant when we're talking about the left's voting machine? Why is Pierre Omidyar someone that we should know about?
Sure. Let me do just a little bit on his background. So he is a billionaire, multiple billions. He was the founder of eBay. That's where it came from. Now, that's ironically, you know, only under free markets,
right,
would you ever have something like eBay. So it's a, you know, yet again, you have people, but this is part of, this is a critical part of the left's power. They shame people who achieve success. And the people who achieve a lot of success, like Omidyar, seem to be especially vulnerable. And so they cleanse their conscience, it would seem, with left-wing political donations of various kinds. We do have, if you go to the YouTube channel for Capital Research Center, we've got a little short video that gives you more background on him. And then we also have on the influencewatch.org, you should go to Omidyar Nexus. So Omidyar Nexus, because that will give you a quick sketch and an overview of the empire of foundations and C3s and C4s. I mean, he's got just an amazing, we would have called it the Omidyar Network, but he's got an Omidyar Network is one of those entities, right? So,
oh, wow.
And Democracy Fund and Democracy Fund Voice and on and on and on. So one thing I would say that is very important is that he is almost certainly the single biggest funder of the Never Trump entities.
Oh, really? I didn't know.
Yes. That. He's absolutely one of the top, as far as I know, he's the largest, millions of dollars given to things like Defending Democracy Together, which was founded by Bill Kristol. But lots of other entities like that get millions out of him. And again, nobody knows that. When Never Trumpers are the media adores the Never Trumpers, yeah, and their groups, and it's never mentioned. Aren't you just basically a little puppet of Pierre Omidyar, the evil billionaire, you know, who would be an evil billionaire if you were a conservative billionaire, but instead he's
a beloved billionaire because he's a,
yes,
leftist. So
yes. The one quick thing I would add, though, because this is another weird thing you may or may not realize, he has this vast series of entities. He has foundations, C4s, this, that, the other. He doesn't need anybody to help him, right, do all these things. And yet, in the last few years, all of a sudden, he's been pouring money into Arabella Advisors' left-wing dark money network. And that's fascinating. You know, if I were a decent newspaper man and had any curiosity about left-wing billionaires doing political things, there'd be interviews with him like, why are you using Arabella? You already have all these entities. You know, mm-hmm. Arabella makes sense for somebody who's rich and but hasn't set up this big infrastructure. But Omidyar's got a vast infrastructure, mm-hmm. and yet he seems to be pouring lots of the money through Arabella Advisors. Probably that is just to hide exactly what he's doing, because once he gives the money to Arabella, nobody else knows what it's getting used for. Whereas when he uses his own groups, they have to make the standard disclosures to the IRS, mm-hmm. and whatnot.
Well, I know, for instance, that he created one thing called Democracy Fund. And I know that that's just one of a zillion entities that he has that have the name democracy attached to it. And if you notice, they're all the left, all the media talks about democracy, democracy, democracy. When I always want to say, this is a republic. Our country is a constitutional republic. It is not a democracy. Our founders rejected the idea of direct democracy. It seems to me that his empire is a genesis of a lot of that democracy this, democracy that. And one of the entities that you've written about, CRC, is the Democracy Fund and all of the different entities that it's like a venture capital fund for left-wing entities and particularly engaged in the election space. Is that a fair assessment?
That is absolutely fair, and I'll give you just a few tidbits out of the Influence Watch entry for the Omid Yar Nexus. There's also one for the Democracy Fund itself, but here's a few tidbits. So Democracy Fund is a member of the Funders Committee for Civic Participation. That was that big network of folks active in the census. That was the central thing fighting in the census, as well as all kinds of election things. Democracy Fund has also tried to transform the entire election system. Again, what does Cleta Mitchell tell us? Change the process and you can ensure victory, right? Mm-hmm. So he has been a big, Democracy Fund has given to Fair Vote, which is the biggest fighter around for ranked choice voting.
Or rigged choice voting. One of my colleagues has dubbed it rigged choice voting.
Yes, rigged choice voting, which is right now conceivably going to deny the Republican Party an Alaska Senate seat, possibly. They've also funded Rock the Vote, and that's a simple thing. That's a charity that has the goal of registering those college students that you were talking about earlier. It's the main group doing that fight. It's also given to the Center for Civic Design, which is a big pusher of vote by mail and has done other nefarious things.
Well, actually, Center for Civic Design designs ballots and ballot applications, absentee ballots. It's part of the infrastructure that I want to get you to talk about in a moment to support mail voting. The Center for Civic Design has a contract, is a recognized vendor by the United States Postal Service, by the way.
Great, huh? Mm-hmm. They don't miss many tricks,
they don't
do
miss
they?
Any. So the Center for Civic Design, that's one of the ones funded by Democracy Fund, I guess.
Yep, and then there's more, but the main thing that I would point out is the two nonprofits that were the pass-throughs for the hundreds of millions of Zuck Bucks, Center for Election Innovation and Research and Center for Tech and Civic Life, they too receive Omid Yar Democracy Fund money.
Well, so it's pretty interesting. If you look at the CTCL that got the biggest chunk of Zuckerbucks, that would be the $350 million. Prior to receiving that massive influx of money, I want to say their annual budget was only about $1 or $2 million.
Yeah, in both of those pass-throughs had been around for some years, and their typical budgets were about $1 million or even less than $1 million. And they got the tsunami of cash,
which then flowed from them to the election offices and the rest is history. But,
I'm proud to say that we and other good conservative allies, like the Foundation for Government Accountability, for instance, done a lot of work in this area. There is now 24 states and several counties, about half a dozen counties, amusingly, mm-hmm. but partly because their states aren't able to pass the law, have passed restrictions.
The Republican legislature passes it and a Democratic governor vetoes it.
Vetoes it, yes. So 24 states have restricted or prohibited it. The language varies. Probably most of the states' language could get better. Again, we don't think of these things. You know, the folks worried about billionaire manipulation of government election offices tried to stop just the money, but of course the left immediately swings back around and they're in the business of in-kind donations,
yeah,
which is not strictly speaking money. So again, it wouldn't hurt if those laws again were tightened, because again, every 80-90% of Americans would say no billionaire, left or right, Republican or Democrat, should be monkeying with our actual government election offices. It's just crazy on the face of it. In fact, there were no laws against it because it was so crazy nobody dreamt of doing it.
So
now there are 24 states that have passed laws that at least restrict it in some way. And by the, as you point out, there are half a dozen additional states, mm-hmm, that the state legislatures have passed such a law and it's been vetoed. Now, again, to show you the absolute partisan nature of this, all half dozen vetoes came from Democratic governors.
Right.
Because they know the truth of what you and I have been talking about for half an hour.
That's right.
That this is a Democrat
thing. I think that's a great thing because they want to be able to have left-wing billionaires manipulate the outcome of the elections in their states, hoping it will help reelect them too.
Absolutely. Saving their own skins. That's exactly. So that is what has happened. And my understanding, I haven't studied them all, but I've heard people that I respect say that the Arizona law may be the very best one. So if folks are looking for model legislation on this, might be good to look at the Arizona one. I'm proud to say I testified to the Arizona House and Senate.
Lot of testifying around the country about the impact of the Zuckerberg money. So thank you for doing that. That's one of the great things about CRC. You do a great job testifying. You provide a lot of information that they wouldn't otherwise have because they're certainly not going to get it from the media. But if you were going to look forward, tell people what your sense is of what's happening in the fall of 2022, what are the things people should be looking for, watching for, trying to stop? What nefarious activities are we seeing, are you seeing in the fall of 2022? Mm-hmm.
Well, there are sadly just almost endless numbers of groups, in addition to the ones that I talked about. There are lots of groups that are pushing for more vote by mail, which of course is the single greatest lever for weakening election integrity. Again, normal Americans know it should be easy to vote and hard to cheat. Vote by mail, everybody until very recently was willing to admit, is a terrible diminishment of election integrity for both parties. By the way, Republicans do bad things too. They did ballot harvesting in North Carolina a few years ago. I know your home state. Yeah. Now, luckily, North Carolinians had the sense to make it illegal to have ballot trafficking, unlike places like California, which gleefully made it legal. But anyway, vote by mail is the central lever for weakening honest elections. Mm-hmm. You also have groups pushing hard on things like automatic voter registration, where anything with a heartbeat or maybe that once had a heartbeat gets registered. And one of the groups pushing for that is the Center for Secure and Modern Elections, Center for Secure and Modern Elections, another bad group. That is out of the Arabella Empire. It's just a pop-up group from Arabella's empire, pushing hard on the automatic registration. There's another thing. Again, I like to think we and our conservative allies who've criticized all of this badness, there's been at least some response by the left. So Zuckerberg himself announced, I'm not going to fund that anymore. I'm not going to do it. Don't come after me. But his main grantee there, that Center for Tech and Civic Life, they have launched a new effort. And this is something folks should be watching out for in their states, the U.S. Alliance for Election Excellence. Now, Cleta, they're so good at these names because, well, obviously, Cleta Mitchell is opposed to election excellence. What a monster. So what that really is just the continuation of Zuckbucks by the main Zuckbuck grantee under a new name. And that they are already saying that they hope to have $80 million for it. I'll be shocked if they don't end up with more than $80 million for it. And what they're going to do is they're going to provide, again, you have to love the way they work with language. All U.S. local election departments are invited to become part of this. And if you're selected, you'll receive training and mentorship and resources.
And grants and awards and prizes and trips.
Yes, and in-kind help, right? Like, for instance, we have these wonderful firms who happen to be Democrat public relations firms that will help you advertise your elections. And I'm sure that they won't in any way bias where those ads run. We're, again, trying to push the turnout where they know they get their votes.
Well,
so again,
so that's what we
all Americans should be outraged. Yeah. Everybody should be outraged. This is not a partisan issue, really, because I'm quite confident that just as the majority of Democrats support, for instance, voter ID laws, the majority of blacks support that, the majority of Hispanics support that, so would the majority of all these groups support not having this kind of fingers on the scale, thumbs on the scale for one side or the other.
Well, I think that, you know, one of the things, as you say, as these laws have passed to ban or prohibit election offices from accepting funds, money, grants, et cetera, most did not include a provision to say anything of value. So now then they can say, oh, well, we're going to provide people and we're going to provide technology training and all these things, which is a thing of value, but it's not money. So I think one of the things that a number of us have realized is that even in the states that have already enacted the prohibitions on the Zuckbucks, need to rethink and add probably a prohibition on acceptance of in-kind contributions of services and other things of value, because they're going to just keep, there is just such an intent. One of the things that I tell people is that the left has infiltrated and insinuated itself into every election office in America. And if you think that it hasn't come to an election office near you, well, you probably are not paying attention. So that's what we have to watch for, is we want our election offices to be run in a completely nonpartisan manner. And frankly, I don't want election offices trying to churn out the vote. That's the role of the political parties, and that's the role of the candidates and the campaigns. My election office needs to run the election in accordance with the law, and that's it.
Yeah, I've heard you say that, and I didn't have that insight, but you did. But after I heard you, I realized here's the right metaphor. And again, I'm completely confident 80-90% of all Americans would agree this is not a partisan matter. If I said to the average American on the street, okay, you know how the presidential election is sort of the Super Bowl of elections? Well, let's talk about the Super Bowl. Would you want some of the rules of the game to get changed a few weeks before the Super Bowl takes place?
Right.
That'd be bizarre. No, I don't trust that. I wouldn't want that. What if I told you that, you know, one of the teams was good at the passing game and the other was good at the ground game, and the rules, it looks like the rules are being tweaked to help the people with the passing game? Well, that's crazy. That's wrong. But to your last point, though, what if I told you that I'm the NFL commissioner and I have instructed all of the referees for the Super Bowl, and I've told them it is your job to try to increase the scoring of the game. We want to have more points on the board. And if you're not doing that, then you're a point suppressor. You're a scoring suppressor, right?
Right. Right.
Again, no ordinary American would have any trouble thinking
that's crazy. It's
not the job of the umpires and the judges and referees in a game to try to help the teams score more.
Right.
That's crazy.
Right.
And then, of course, you'd immediately start wondering, well, what about those? I don't know who that referee is. And even if he meant well, he might, you know, who's to say that he's really going to help both teams equally? And I mean, again, it's nonsense.
Right. It's nonsense. They need to just, like I say, the election officials need to run the elections according to the law, and treat all voters and groups of voters exactly the same. If they would just do that, it would. But that is definitely the left has made a real point over the last decade of turning election offices into voter turnout machines, but only in certain areas. But you mentioned something that I want people to see, and we'll post this along with the podcast, but you've done research on this narrative of the left and the media about vote suppression. Tell us about what you've done in that regard.
Well, this is just, we have videos on a bunch of these things. We have a short video on Zuckbucks, a short one on ballot trafficking. But the most recent one that just dropped this morning as we're taping is about the vote suppression nonsense. And again, it's just a 3-minute one, but, and the central info is from our friends at the Honest Elections Project. So in the case of Georgia, where they put through a law that had, they had a law that made their elections easier to vote and harder to cheat, which is exactly the key. But of course, the left went bananas and screamed, "It's vote suppression, it's disenfranchisement, blah blah blah."
Major League Baseball, the All Star Game.
Exactly. That's why Major League Baseball keep the All Star Game. Yep. Baseball leaving didn't help the Republican Party. It hurt black businesses in Atlanta, which is a terrible thing to do. I would be appalled if I had discovered I had done that. But of course, being left means never having to say you're sorry. So the simplest number is, you compare the 2018 primaries, where the left claimed that there's going to be all this vote suppression under these laws, to the 2022 primary election in Georgia after this terrible law. It's massive increase. It's the better part of doubling, if I remember the numbers correctly. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of more voters and all. And so the law that supposedly was a brutal racist vote suppression didn't stop a gigantic increase in voting. So again, just on the face of it, these things are nonsense. If they didn't have such a biased media, speaking of football, doing the blocking for them, they would never be able to score with these ridiculous narratives that this is vote suppression and racism and the rest. Well, it's not.
One of my favorite videos is of Senator Tim Scott, African-American Republican senator from South Carolina, on the Financial Services Committee, or maybe the Banking Committee, after all these corporations and included some of these big banks, Citibank and, all of these big banks came out and condemned the new Georgia law last year in 2021. And so there was a hearing and there were all these bankers, 4 or 5 of them, before the Senate Banking Committee. And Senator Scott said, "Well, I'm looking at the letters that each of you have written opposing the law in Georgia that was recently passed to strengthen the election integrity, the election reform bill. And each of you signed a letter. Could each of you explain to me exactly what your objections were to the law? What are your objections?" And they couldn't name anything. One of them mumbled something about, "Well, we want everybody to be able to vote." And he said, "Well, I understand that. We all want that. But what exactly about this new law is it that you think will keep that from happening?" None of them could answer the question. None of them. So it just tells you that the left's pressure campaign, cancel culture and all, is alive and well in the corporations, which is unfortunate. It's unfortunate, but that's where we are. But, well, Scott, you and your team are just amazing. We're going to put links to CRC and some of these reports and the videos and Influence Watch, but you just have no idea what an amazing support it is to have, because you're about getting out the facts and not, taking these narratives and taking them and looking at them and saying, "Well, is that true or is it not true? What do the facts say?" So we just appreciate all of your hard work. You guys just do an amazing job. And under your leadership, CRC has really just become a real life force. I mean, I've always loved CRC, but today, under your leadership, it's just more than any of us could have imagined. So thanks for all you do. We really appreciate it.
Well, I love spending my life bragging about what my team achieves.
Well, it's pretty great. And your testimony before Senator Whitehouse is always always a treat. So we should probably post that as well, a link to that, because that was pretty spectacular. So... Well, thanks for joining us. Thank you so much for all you do. And that concludes this wonderful interview with Scott Walter, president of the Capital Research Center and its project, InfluenceWatch.org. Thanks for joining us. We hope that you will share this this video, this episode, share our podcast, subscribe to the podcast, go to our website, whoscounting.us, and make sure that you are involved and paying attention to what's going on, and get yourself involved in the election process in your area. All elections are local. All elections take place at the local level. We as citizens can together come together and fight against this leftist infiltration of our election system. So we appreciate your joining us, and we look forward to the next episode of Who's Counting. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Who's Counting. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Conservative Partnership Institute's Election Integrity Network. It is filmed and recorded at CPI Studios in Washington, D.C. Help us grow this show by sharing this episode with a friend, and be sure to subscribe and to give us a good review. We need your word of mouth, because big tech can't be trusted and tries to cancel us daily. Help fight back by visiting whoscounting.us and sign up for this podcast, for our newsletter, become part of the Election Integrity Network.